Hampshire Hispites. Join us as we delve into the past and go on a journey to discover some of the county's best and occasionally unknown history. We'll be speaking to experts, as well as enthusiasts, asking them to reveal some of our hidden heritage, as well as share with you a few fascinating untold stories.
Hello, my name's Barry Sherlock. I'm a trustee of the Hampshire Archives Trust. We're an umbrella come information hub for all archives and archive-related activities in Hampshire, though we don't actually own any archives ourselves. We publish a very informative newsletter, more a journal really, and have a generous grant scheme. We encourage applications for appropriate projects as detailed on our website, where there's much more on what I'm about to tell you. The website address is simply www.hampshirearchivestrust.co.uk. The only thing you might get wrong is to use archive instead of archives plural. If you in any way use archives, we encourage you to join the Hampshire Archives Trust. One general point. As we know, the pandemic has changed the way we all work, and especially the access or lack of access to public archives and other sources. It's still not clear what will change, but at this time of uncertainty, I'm making little attempt to account for them. It's a pleasure to be asked by the Hampshire History Trust to talk about archives. Under the title Archives Galore, I'm aiming to give a general introduction, which hopefully will be of interest to researchers at all levels, the beginner as well as those with more experience. I'm talking as a user of archives, not a professional archivist, and so I should be concentrating on a practical hands-on approach to researching information for use in a variety of ways, for writing articles or blogs, for teaching, for local history research, even playwriting, or merely to tell stories and have fun. Like most people with an interest in the past, I believe you cannot understand a place, a person, or even a company without knowing their history. And the bedrock for all this is the information to be found in archives. And I'm using the word archives in the widest possible sense. Obviously, this includes official archives, such as the National Archives at Kew, and the record offices in Winchester, Southampton, and Portsmouth. I might also mention Winchester College, whose archives contain important papers on many places in Hampshire. Then there are the archives that belong to local history societies, of which there are well over 100 of all kinds in Hampshire, perhaps as many as 140 if you include amenity groups. Also, it includes the archives of museums and other significant centres, such as the National Motor Museum, Bewley, the Florence Nightingale Museum, London, local museums such as the one at Bishop's Waltham, military museums such as the Royal Hampshire Regiment Museum, the Willis Museum, Basingstoke, and all the others run by the Hampshire Cultural Trust. Then there are the county and national societies. There's hardly a subject that does not have one or more societies devoted to it, whether it's railways, mills, workhouses, Methodism, architecture, or on particular subjects such as the Friends of Gilbert White, the Selborne Society, the Mayflower Society, etc. Also, many well-known companies, past and present, have archives that may be useful for the history of a particular place at a particular time. The archives of Wallace and Stevens, the Basingstoke traction engine manufacturer, are, for example, kept at the Museum of English Rural Life at the University of Reading. So these are all archives of various kinds. And then there are the many individuals who hold a personal collection of information on a subject. I call them squirrels. If you want to find out something about any place, there's bound to be someone there who will know. And for any firm, still in business or no longer active, there will almost certainly be someone who once worked there and has an archive of some kind. Also, I take the word archives to include libraries, not only special collections like the Cope Collection of Antiquarian Books on Hampshire in the University of Southampton Library, but also those holding runs of difficult-to-find local publications. Finally, we all know that today, the first port of call for any inquiry is the internet. Many of the archives mentioned above can be accessed in some way or other on the net, and this has completely changed the way that research is carried out. The implications of the net are still to be worked out, but ask yourself, even before the pandemic, when did you last go to a reference library or a physical archive? So, I now want to start with the three record offices in the county. These are staffed by professional archivists who have a passion for history and a wide knowledge of their collections. So, don't be shy at asking them questions. Local public record offices are, in fact, a relatively modern facility, only being made a requirement by a key act in 1958. Before that, some corporations did have important archives that were known and accessible to historians, whilst others did not. Southampton was in the first category and Portsmouth in the second. The formation of the Southampton Record Society in 1905 gave the city a good start and led to the publication of the Southampton Record Series. In 1953, the City Record Office opened its doors to the public. In contrast, at this time, the City Records of Portsmouth were still virtually unknown to historians, and it required an order in 1960 from the Lord Chancellor's Department to force the Council to comply with the Public Records Act 1958. As a result, a full-time archivist was appointed, and in 1971, Portsmouth started to publish its own record series. In Winchester, the lead was taken by the City, which appointed Barbara Carpenter Turner honorary archivist in 1946. A year later, the county followed suit with Eleanor Cottrell, the first full-time county archivist. Much of this was impelled by the Hampshire Field Club, whose president in 1945 made it a priority in his inaugural speech. In Southampton, there are two relevant locations for archives. In the Civic Centre are the Southampton archives themselves, and then in the nearby public library is the Local History and Maritime Library. Southampton Archives holds material from 1199 to the present day. As a port with a flux of people from all corners of the world, there are rich holdings on many minority communities: Huguenots, Afro-Caribbeans, Poles, Asians, and many others. Also, as might be expected, there is much on ships and their crews in the 19th and 20th centuries. The Central Index Register of Merchant Seamen, 1914-1941, is a national archive held at Southampton. It gives details of the sailors who've served on the ships with personal detail, sometimes photographs, even details of tattoos. Southampton also has a collection of 800 recordings of conversations with a huge variety of people and associated documents, covering many subjects, such as cinema, football, memories of World War II, the Blitz, etc. There's also much on the city and its administration, on property ownership, finance and trade, justice and poor relief. There are records of the local boards, the pavement commissioners, boards of health, building control, education, hospitals and the police. Also on special boards, such as that which oversaw the building of Northern Bridge. Individual items include an earlier terrier of Southampton of 1454, giving a layout of buildings and people, and customs books that show the goods that passed through the Bargate in the 15th and 16th centuries. And there are brokerage books giving details of trade in the port, silk, spices, herring, and much else, and the ships that carried them. Much of this material has been worked on by academics and distilled into the Southampton Record Series, an extremely valuable resource now comprising almost 100 volumes on all manner of subjects. Close by is the Southampton Local History and Maritime Library, holding not only local material, but also records of national importance, such as shipping and yacht registers and Board of Trade wreck reports. Particularly useful is its Local History and Maritime Digital Archive, which is searchable online. The library also has runs of journals, such as Ships Monthly and Sea Breezes, with an index for items on Southampton. And there are reports on all kinds of accidents, maritime ones, such as boiler explosions, and many others. The author, Frank Bowen, 1894-1957, left a huge collection of press cuttings and notebooks, etc., on maritime subjects. And there are many illustrations of all kinds of ships in the library, notably those of John H. Isherwood, who was around from 1925-1971, a prolific contributor to Sea Breezes. And as you might expect, if you want to know anything about the Titanic disaster, go to Southampton and its Sea City Museum. Amongst the large collection of maps and plans of the city are the late 19th century GOAD fire insurance plans, that's G-O-A-D. They give detailed street-by-street information on buildings, land use, and urban development. Finally, much on the city is posted on the Sotinopedia website, which is billed as an A to Z of Southampton's history. Now, moving on to Portsmouth and its history centre, the collections of which are in the Guildhall and start in the 14th century, before the port was even a major naval centre. Associated finding aids include the Portsmouth Encyclopedia, prepared by Alan King in 2011, which is downloadable. Other finding aids are a guide to tracing houses and other buildings in the city, and an A to Z guide to parish registers. The Portsmouth History Centre has thousands of books and other items on the city. These include some 1,500 books on the Royal Navy alone, and a special collection on Nelson. There are also about 2,000 indexed photographs of ships and other naval subjects. There's also a large collection of nearly 1,700 recorded interviews with a wide variety of people covering many subjects, including World War II and D-Day, the Royal Dockyard, working the ferries, making corsets, etc. There are even interviews with local pop musicians. And the Portsmouth History Centre also holds two other huge collections of national importance, namely one on the novelist Charles Dickens in the city of his birth, and another on Sherlock Holmes and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who, as a young GP, worked in Southsea and wrote the first Watson and Holmes story there. The Hampshire Record Office in Winchester caters for everything outside Southampton and Portsmouth. It has long been the responsibility of the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, as the representative of the Crown, to look after the county's records. As it happens, appropriately enough, the current Lord Lieutenant, Nigel Atkinson, is president of the Hampshire Archives Trust. County records were traditionally kept in a chest with several locks, but in 1773, the JPs decided to build a room with proper shelves and conveniences for depositing books and records after the county. After many changes, the current purpose-built office was opened in 1993 by Her Majesty the Queen. In normal times, the Hampshire Record Office can be visited without an appointment, merely by presenting a reader's card. And if you don't have one, this can be issued with ID. Current arrangements for visiting the Record Office have, however, been perturbed by the pandemic, and one only hopes that they will soon be simplified and brought back to their normal form. The Record Office has a splendid search room with an extensive library of reference books, an A to Z local studies collection, providing a wealth of printed sources, many locally published. There are card indexes of wills, parish registers, and much else. And there are computers, which are necessary for ordering items from the strong room, and also offer free access to a number of commercial finding sites. There are well over a million items stored on more than 8 miles of shelving. They cover all levels of local government, religious organisations, families and individuals, schools, charities, societies and sports clubs, military organisations, hospitals, magistrates, coroners, and much else. Also, the collection includes the archives of Winchester City and the records of the Diocese of Winchester. Significant collections include those of about 70 prominent landowners and Hampshire families, and businesses such as Portals, the papermakers, and military organisations such as the Royal Green Jackets Regiment, and many others. The Hampshire Record Office also holds the Wessex Film and Sound Archives, an incredibly rich collection of films and sound recordings covering Hampshire and adjacent counties, with the material from local and regional TV and radio, as well as amateurs. There are special booths for viewing and listening to the material. This is really a treasure house for local historians. Of course, as with any other major archive, the challenge with the Hampshire Record Office is often to find out what you want. Fortunately, it has a brilliant online catalogue. If you have specific items of interest, the easiest thing to do is to search online at home before visiting. In fact, this is essential during the pandemic, though in normal times it can also be done at the visit. There is a simple search function which will deliver all items that contain a given word or several words or a phrase put in inverted commas. And there's the also so-called advanced search, which offers a range of other options. It's not complicated to use the online catalogue, but equally, it's not easy to explain. The easiest way to learn about it is probably to play around at home with a specific inquiry. But I will try to present an example. Imagine you're interested in the manor of West Borrant, which is said Boar Hunt. First, having established that the answer to your query is not in the Victoria County history, accessed online from the British History site. With a simple search of the catalogue, entering in quotes, Manor of West Borrant, you find 18 items on the subject. Similarly, in quotes, West Borrant Manor yields another 2 items. Looking at these, you might notice that most have a finding number starting with 4M53, which refers to a collection of nearly 2,000 items in the Hampshire Record Office relating to Southwark Priory. And 4M53/23 is a reference to West Borrant, where the Priory owned property. There are actually 25 items in this category. So, for example, 4M53/23/6 is the 6th of these 25 items. So, you found a fair number of items and established that some understanding of the ownership of West Borrant by Southwark Priory will help the research. Unless you're familiar with the catalogue, you probably won't remember the details of this exercise, but hopefully it does demonstrate how the Hampshire Record Office online catalogue can be interrogated in a number of ways to find items relating to a specific inquiry, and in so doing, how to get a clearer idea of what sources there are and how they might relate to your inquiry. So, this is a rapid survey of the 3 record offices in Hampshire. Obviously, the National Archives at Kew should also be explored, especially as so much is online, but even more is available at a visit. There's a huge amount of material there on subjects administered for the county, but by central government, such as schools, public health, poor relief, and the like. The National Archives has an excellent website, and in particular, its discovery domain covers the whole country, with more than 32 million records, of which nearly 30% are downloadable. They're held by 2,500 archives across the county, including the Hampshire Record Office and the offices at Southampton and Portsmouth. Particularly useful for tracing relatively wealthy individuals who own property in more than one diocese are the wills of the Prerogative Court of Canterbury, which can be downloaded for a modest sum, even free during the pandemic. The National Archives website also has a large number of how to look for guides for special collections on no less than 360 subjects. There's much on family history, service records, world wars, courts, prisons, foreign and colonial history, and much, much more. Even if you're dealing with inquiries relating only to Hampshire, it's worth exploring the National Archives website as material is sometimes held out of county. Besides which, the expertise to hand in an online guide on any subject will generally help to understand better the records available. As already mentioned, another important deposit of thousands of records relating to many places, by no means all in Hampshire, are the archives of Winchester College, which cover more than 600 years. Because so many people of influence went to Winchester, they may be found in the registers of scholars and commoners, or mentioned in the school magazines, or in the war service rolls for both world wars. Much material is online at www.winchestercollegearchives.org and can be consulted by appointment at the school. Also online is a 3-volume catalogue, Winchester College Muniments, published between 1976 and 1984, which is indexed in fine detail and lists virtually the entire archive. Because Winchester was endowed with extensive estates, many of which continued in ownership until relatively recently, the muniments provide a window on their past, especially regarding property ownership. The Manor of Ealing on Southampton Water was purchased in 1372 by the college's founder, William of Wickham, and granted to the school in 1385. The documents relating to the manor cover 25 pages in the published catalogue online. Similarly, those for the Priory at Hamble covers 35 pages. Moving now to the Hampshire Field Club, which was founded in Southampton by T.W. Shaw and a few others in 1885. Its main publication has been the Proceedings of the Hampshire Field Club and Archaeological Society since 1996, called Hampshire Studies. All volumes published between 1887 and 2017 can be viewed on the website. More recent volumes are accessible only by members of the Field Club, which is a good reason to join. Periodic indexes of the proceedings were published in appropriate volumes and can be viewed online. In addition, Professor Anthony King has prepared an online index of all volumes arranged by period. This also covers the Hampshire Field Club newsletter. Another countywide source of information on a wide range of subjects, as well as a source of illustrations, is the Hampshire Cultural Trust, a charity founded in 2014 to oversee many of the museums in the county. Its website gives access to many of its collections and can be searched. For example, entering Wallace and Stevens in the search box gives three photographs of traction engines and steam and diesel rollers manufactured in Basingstoke by the well-known engineering firm. Entering Southwark finds a print of the prior's chair. Similarly, Porchester yields many prints and paintings of Porchester Castle, as well as a painting of a jigsaw puzzle of the 1790s made by a French prisoner of war. Specialist organisations concerned with archives are often useful. For example, as its name suggests, the Business Archives Council may be of interest if a specific business is being researched in a specific place. It has an online bibliography of 40,000 items, which is accessible for a fee, and it publishes a number of research guides on subjects such as brewing, shipbuilding, banking, and the pharmaceutical industry. There are many other specialist sources. If you have an interest in nonconformity, there is the Strict Baptist History Society, and Peter Higginbottom has created a brilliant website on workhouses. For science and medicine, there's the Wellcome Collection. That's Wellcome, a free museum and library with a huge selection of archives and images that can be used free of charge. If you're interested, for example, in the discovery of treatments for scurvy, there are more than 1,000 items in the Wellcome Collection. This would be invaluable for a study of the work of Dr. James Lind at the Royal Naval Hospital at Hasler in Gosport. Alternatively, you might go to the website of the James Lind Library. Sometimes you'll need to find out about a place that is not well known to you. A quick trawl on Google and Wikipedia is the obvious first step. Next might be the historic Ordnance Survey maps on the website of the National Library of Scotland. Trade directories are another prime source. A large number of them is available online from Leicester University. It takes a bit of practice to use the site, but it can all be done at home. Other useful websites include British History Online, essentially the Victoria County History, another called Hampshire History, Find a Grave, Visions of Britain, and of course the website of the Hampshire Archives Trust. The Hampshire Genealogical Society is obviously not only a very important source of information on family history, but it also publishes a series of booklets giving basic information on particular Hampshire villages. These can be purchased online. Also, for members, there is a walk-in research centre, which is at the moment in the process of being relocated from Cossum to the Hampshire Record Office at Winchester. This takes me on to the 140 or so local societies in the county. Some are concerned just with local history, others with conservation and community. They vary considerably in their scope and activity, but there's scarcely a place that does not somewhere have a group of people or perhaps an individual who has a great deal of knowledge on the area and is generally very willing to share it. Their websites are often extremely informative. I point you particularly to one like the re-engineered site of the Tadleyan District History Society. Many of these local societies have an archive of some kind. It may be a collection in an individual's house or a cupboard in the village hall, or increasingly, it may be entirely digital. Some such archives are catalogued online or accessible by other means. The Milford-on-Sea Historical Records Society, for example, probably the oldest society in the county, founded in 1909, has a searchable catalogue with filters for date and format. For example, entering aircraft turns up an interesting item about the sale of the Efford Park estate, which mentions that it had a private aircraft landing ground. To take another example, if you're interested in Edward Gibbon, the author of The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, whose family had a small estate at Berriton near Petersfield, the Hampshire Record Office search with Gibbon Berriton yields 23 items, whilst a useful account of his time in the village is on the website of the local society, Berriton Heritage. If you have an interest in Havant and its surroundings, including Bedhampton, Hayling Island, Rowland's Castle, etc., there's a huge collection, almost an archive, of more than 150 booklets on a huge range of subjects that can be downloaded for free from www.thespring.co.uk. Bitton, near Southampton, has a similar collection of about 50 booklets on many local subjects. They're not downloadable, but can be purchased for a modest sum online. Also, there are many large collections of photographs and postcards relating to a given place, including the commercial Francis Frith collection, many of which have been purchased by the Hampshire Record Office. Also, Heritage is another example of a personal endeavour that contains hundreds of images of the town of Alresford, and these may be used with permission. As already mentioned, the University of Southampton Library holds the Cope collection of antiquarian books on Hampshire. They were collected by the Reverend Sir William Henry Cope, who lived at Bramshill in the county, and who in 1879 produced a catalogue of the 700 books or so he owned. This is reproduced in Turley's Hampshire and Isle of Wight Bibliographies, published in 1975, which is very useful for tracking early works. It might also be noted that the University of Southampton Library holds the papers of the Duke of Wellington. So, this is merely an overview of a huge subject. I have not, for example, mentioned newspapers. It hardly needs saying that getting to know sources, their strengths and weaknesses, accessibility, previous studies of them, etc., is a key part of any research project. I hope that this talk has given you some ideas. In the end, every researcher becomes an expert on the archives relating to their corner and can therefore help others with similar interests. One way of getting to know people in the field is to join the Hampshire Archives Trust, either as a corporate member or a personal member. Just go to the website www.hampshirearchivestrust.co.uk. It costs very little and delivers a lot. I'm grateful to Sue Woolgar, former Southampton City Archivist and Secretary of the Hampshire Archives Trust, for comments on an early draft of this talk. Thank you very much for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode. If you would like to find out a little bit more about what we've been talking about, then please visit the website www.winchesterheritageopendays.org or click on Hampshire Hisbites. And there you'll find today's show notes, as well as some links to more information. Thank you.